media commentator Andrew Holden, a journalist for more than 30 years, including 5 as editor of The Press in Christchurch and 4 as editor-in-chief of The Age in Melbourne. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. What's your take on the first tranche of support, government support, for the media last week?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the media industry should be very pleased and relieved that the government's taken their plight so seriously. As the Minister, Chris Farfoy, said last week, it's only the third industry to receive specific funding after healthcare and aviation. So, you know, there's a vote of thanks and confidence from the government that the media really do matter, particularly in these difficult times. But when you look into the detail, there's no question, as many commentators have said, it's the broadcasters who've got the lion's share of this initial help. My back of an envelope calculations are around 38 million of the 50 million has gone to broadcasters. And the company that really has missed out is Stuff at this point. The government's put in there $1.3 million for news subscriptions, but there's a double irony in that because you've got Stuff who've got the most number of journalists around the country. They've got the website with the biggest news audience, but they've also made the business decision not to put a paywall in, as the New Zealand Herald and many other the smaller ones have. So unless we're going to see a sudden flood of Dominion posts through all government departments in Wellington, it's very difficult for them to access that. So that kind of suggests that the extra $11 million pot for specific targeted assistance has been put in there to try and help them out.
It's, yeah, there was certainly a contained commentary from Stuff's chief executive, Sinead Boucher, in our interview about that, and perhaps there is an expectation that they might have a claim on the lion's share, given they can't access much of the rest of the support package.
No, that's right. And the curious thing's always the backstory, isn't it? We as journalists are always fascinated to find out what happened in the background, because the minister did say that the proposals in the package were generated from the industry themselves in a series of workshops, which is clearly where things like holding back the transmission fees and various other elements have helped the broadcaster. So you kind of wonder what Stuff was able to say in those workshops around how the money might flow through them to help them. But clearly, you can see here there's no specific answer for that particular media organisation.
The other part that Stuff is highlighting is what Australia is doing to try and force the digital giants into pay for news content. However, in our interview with the minister on Friday morning, he did say officials, New Zealand officials, were talking to Australian officials, but appeared much more lukewarm and certainly less prepared to say we're going to go where they're going. Why is this so important to companies like Stuff, to the private media companies, and particularly those who don't have, you know, government backing? And how difficult is it going to be for Australia to introduce what it wants to?
Well, I mean, that's going to be the $64 million question. Who knows how many million dollars they might get out of it? But any country that can figure out how to impose fees on the digital giants out of America will be the one that sets the standard, arguably, for the rest of the world. And you can imagine many other countries will follow that. I mean, the basic business reason is that the Googles and the Facebooks have taken the money away from the big classified beasts that were the newspaper publishers like Stuff here and the Fairfax in Australia. And so they're desperate in some way to find a way of garnering that back, whether it's through a copyright, whether there's an imposed thing from government. There's clearly a desperate need to find that that source of revenue that might replace the rivers of gold that have disappeared. It's going to be pretty tough, and if the Australians can figure it out, that will be a remarkable achievement, I have to say.
Let's talk about the other matter that was... let's pick up on the Local Democracy Reporters Program, which the minister did emphasise. Just explain how that's worked so far and what might be coming.
It's a really interesting project, this, and it comes out of England, and the BBC started it off, and your CEO, Paul Thompson, was alerted to it, might be some 2 years ago, I think. And in essence, what's happening here is that 8 reporters have been hired by Radio New Zealand under this pilot, but placed into the newsrooms of publishers around the country. So we're talking places that often struggle to get lots of reporters, like the West Coast. It might be areas like Marlborough or areas like that, where a journalist joins the local newsroom but answers to RNZ, if you like, in that they can't be pulled off and put onto police or anything else. Their job is to monitor local democracy. So they go to the council meetings, they go to regional council, they do areas that aren't necessarily the most interesting and can take quite a lot of time to get stories that would normally float up and become front page stories. But if you don't have somebody sitting in those meetings and listen and watching what the local elected officials are up to, then you really miss out on that. So I thought it was fascinating that Farfoy said, as part of the tranche two that they're looking at, which presumably comes out after the budget, is a commitment to build on that pilot, which suggests that they're going to put significantly more reporters under it. And that kind of suggests to me that it's almost like the recreation of NZPA as an independent news organisation, not by stealth, but by consequences of a crisis like this. And the value for the big media organisations, it means that for the number of journalists that they can afford to pay for themselves, they know they don't have to put them into council chambers doing what these reporters will do out of a central pool.
Just finally, again, there was talk about the RNZ TVNZ project being put on ice, this merger or this building of a new company out of them. However, talking again to the minister on Friday morning, it sounds like still awaiting the business business case in August, and it sounded like it actually still is alive and still decisions to be made on what goes to Cabinet.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned last week, I'd like them to just put the foot down on this one and really work very hard on it. The organisation's PwC, I think it is looking at the business case. And if you take that indication from government around the local democracy reporting and that might be a component of it, the sooner we can get a sense of how a merger of the two organisations might look, how long it would take, what would be the business models, i.e. will TVNZ have substantial portions of it that don't have advertising, so that's now freed up to go to the likes of TV3, the quicker the media industry is going to have a sense of what the future might look like. And it's, you know, so many industries at the moment are rethinking their business models and how they might sustain themselves. The media industry needs that too. They need a reasonable sense of what 2 to 3 years might look like so that they can start planning how they're going to react to that.
That key question is the one, isn't it, whether there is any kind of commercial element to the new organisation. That's what, you know, TV3 and its owners are looking towards. Is it going to have a competitive channel against it, competitive in the sense of advertising?
Yeah, absolutely. Or is the government prepared to commit the taxpayer to fund the core of media coverage within this country that allows others to find what areas that they survive in and where they can make the most out of it? I think that's really the broad fundamental question for New Zealand is how do we want our stories told? How do we expect to pay for that? And therefore, if there's a core public service group of journalists or public funded group of journalists who can provide the initial coverage, then what does that leave for everybody else to kick off from that?
It was a little harder to read between the lines about things like whether Stuff and the Herald were to approach again, perhaps with one of them genuinely in a demonstrable crisis. There might also be some kind of rethinking about whether and how that merger can happen. It was hard to pin that down, but that seems to remain on the agenda as well.
The cynic might say that they're going to sit back and see how they cope with the crisis and whether they're forced to merge or they'll come back with a changed approach. I mean, in difficult circumstances like this, at times you can just sit back and let the industry sort out for themselves what their future might be. I mean, they definitely danced away from it. To me, the key thing that the government can do is determine whether it really thinks TVNZ and RNZ should be merged and what that looks like. That's the critical thing for the rest of the industry to understand.
Thank you very much, Andrew Holden, RNZ's media commentator.